For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Harrington deal. Chris Henry joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's a Do or Die Bed-Stuy by The Divine Sound. Some first-generation hip-hop, like late 70s, early 80s kind of stuff. Bed-Stuy, obviously, a neighborhood in Brooklyn. Brooklyn Nets are in town tonight.
Zaire Williams returns to Memphis. Talk about that and that game and the Grizzlies generally in a moment. The news did drop yesterday that Rudy Gay has retired. I don't know if you happened to read his. Jeffrey said he didn't realize Players Tribune was still a thing.
I didn't either.
So what's amazing to me about the Players Tribune stuff is that literally every piece, that's the same voice. You know, I, of course they don't write them themselves or whatever, but it's literally the same voice. It was an interesting piece because Rudy said in it some interesting things. He said, this was not the career I wanted. You know it. I know it. Like, whatever. He sort of, and then the one stop that he wrote about with real affection was Memphis. That's the place that he wrote about. He said, I know people goof on me that they did better after I was traded, whatever else. But he talked about how much this time here meant to him. He specifically singled out Damon Stoudemire for shooting him straight when he was a young player. Mike Miller for showing him how to work. And then he mentioned Kyle Lowry, who he'd played with in middle school,
right.
In fact.
Yeah.
And so
I saw he'd retire, but I didn't read the thing. It's interesting. You could always detect, and I even noted this when he came back for the Marc Gasol thing. There was a little bit of awkwardness about that because the reunion and you're kind of there, but you're not, you're part of it, but you're kind of not. You could always detect a little bit of self-consciousness and self-awareness from Rudy about all of this. Yeah.
It's funny because the one thing about a young player, he didn't seem particularly self-aware. Like as a young player, he wanted to be Kobe and wasn't.
I mean, on the court in
on
particular.
The court, yes. Yeah. On the court in particular. I mean, you had the Toronto Raptors clips and not this guy.
Right.
And that's what he wanted to be.
There was a disconnect, and it's just, I mean, this is high, these are like high-end problems in the world of athletes, but there was a little bit of a disconnect between the magnitude of Rudy's physical talent and the skill level he had with the ball and his feel for the game. He had the elite wing physical talent. He did not have elite wing handle and vision and feel.
Right.
And so what that ends up being is like a guy who had a great NBA career but was never quite a star. And that's just the way it goes sometimes. Again, like that's like a 99.9 percentile kind of problem, you know?
Made $181 million over the course of his career, which seems pretty good. But did bounce around for a long time.
He actually did a good job of transitioning into being a veteran role player, you know?
Yeah.
And he was the kind of player who you would wonder if you could do that. But he was a good veteran role player.
I would have imagined he couldn't do it, given his sense of himself, inflated, which he talks about too, his inflated sense of himself early in his career. But he did do it. In terms of the playoff runs, the first one he was hurt. That's why they traded for Shane Battier, right? He had gotten hurt.
Yeah, he hurt. I think it's like a wrist or shoulder or something, and they traded for Battier. Rudy's still on the team,
so you
go back to 2011. At the end of every playoff, when they're all getting together in a huddle, and Rudy's in the huddle, but in street clothes, you know? So part of it, but not a part of it from that point on.
And then the second run was
Zach got hurt, and Rudy was the
main guy.
Yeah, and he forced a bunch of shots and low percentage, and he couldn't carry them, and they lost that playoff series.
And then the next one he was traded? Was that the next one he was traded that year?
I think it was the next season he was traded, yeah.
Which is a situation that they got themselves in salary, in terms of salary. Yeah,
yeah, no, that was one of those things where they had a chance to extend him early for a certain amount, and they didn't do it because they didn't want to pay that amount, ended up paying more the next year.
Right.
Heisman didn't want to pay. I'm making up numbers.
I remember
like
that.
It's like he didn't want to pay the $55 million. Then the next summer he pays $85 million. It's one of those kind of things. Yeah.
Anyway, it was really, I honestly, when I saw it yesterday, I didn't read it. It's a piece in the Players Tribune.
Right.
But then it was excerpted in the Early Word today. And it's the stuff that he wrote about Memphis. And I said, you know what? I made a point to read it. And it was really good. All right. So you got the Grizzlies and the Nets in town. Now, listen, this is one. The Nets lose in OT last night, have to fly to Memphis.
Right.
They're a bad team.
Yeah. No, it's a good second night back-to-back on the road. It's hard in the NBA. This is coming off the overtime win. Their four top players all played 37 or more minutes. I think a couple of them were over 40. It is early in the season, and so I was talking about yesterday about, like, you know, the Grizzlies' depth is not really helping them in the second half of games, but maybe that changes over time. So I don't know how much the back-to-back matters tonight relative to, like, in the, you know, the middle of the season, but it's probably helpful to some degree. You know, if you're Dennis Schroeder and you're having to, like, you know,
right,
handle the ball for the Nets, and you played 42 minutes and then you're, you know, flying into Memphis and what have you. And so, yeah, I think, you know, you'll take it. The other thing I jumped out to me, I looked at the Nets briefly this morning. It's four games in, but they're shooting a lot of threes and they're making a lot of threes, and that's not a good recipe for the Grizzlies, as we saw with Chicago. So, like, definitely not a game to take for granted.
Why, by the way, you talked yesterday about it, and you wrote about it in the piece, which I've tweeted out that went up midday yesterday. Why is it that they are? Is there some reason that they are so woeful guarding the three in early in every season? Is there a theory about that?
So I break that apart between the early and the guarding the three part. The guarding the three part, we talked about that a little bit yesterday. Like, the Taylor Jenkins defensive philosophy has been sort of like the old Mike Budenholzer or Milwaukee philosophy of your focus is protecting the paint and you go from there. And that makes you susceptible to hot three-point shooting nights. And people get mad about that, but you look up and, like, you're a top-10 defense.
Right.
Well, they're not a top-10 defense right now.
Right.
But in the past, they've been a top-10 defense and still had nights where, like, they give up a lot of threes, right?
Right.
There's an element of defensive philosophy that sacrifices three in order to guard the paint. And you could argue about that or not, but that's not an early thing necessarily. In terms of the early bad starts on defense, I wonder if part of it is they've had a history of, like, focusing on offense in preseason, like, because that has been their problem. At the end of the year, they're good on defense, but they're bad on offense. And so you come into the summer and, like, we're going to overhaul our offense. And it seems like every year it's like, we're changing this on offense. We got to get better on offense. And so you spend your whole preseason doing that, and then you got to catch up on defense. I wonder if that's part of it.
What did you think of Taylor Jenkins laying into the players? Like, he did, and Drew has a piece up a little bit about this as well. Like, that's not typical for him.
No, but it's typical of coaches.
Typical of the coaches.
So maybe that's a sign of, like, sort of, you know, getting into a new era of his tenure with the team or whatever. I think it's probably appropriate. Like,
it's winning,
you know,
time, it's accountability, all of that.
That's right.
Yes. Atrocious, he said. So we've got Zaire Williams' return, and Zaire Williams last night, 18 points, 4 of 5 from three.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he's turning the corner. Maybe he'll be a good player. I hope so in his regard. But, like, he's had good games before. Like, you can have good games.
Right.
And so we'll see. I mean, he's a guy who, like, couldn't stay healthy and his confidence wavered. And, you know, he came into the league in terms of basketball experience and in terms of physical development. He was a little behind even his age, you know. Right. So who knows what the future is going to hold with him. It's a good opportunity for him to be on a team where he's going to get playing time. Because most teams around the league, he probably wouldn't be playing. And so it's good for him.
Would you rather have Jake LaRavia than Zaire Williams?
No, because I was thinking about that. I was thinking about that driving in, the Zaire thing. Like, if you look at the Grizzlies roster they have now, 1 through 15, like, is there anyone on the roster you would flip for Zaire Williams? Maybe some people would say John Conchar, But the reason you traded Zaire Williams and not John Conchar partly was the contract situation.
Right.
So that's not really
right.
a choice.
That's right.
You wouldn't flip Jay Huff or Scottie Pippen, the two guys you salvated off of two ways.
Right.
You know, maybe some people would look at Jalen Wells, but most wouldn't, because you got you on the ground floor of a rookie season. You look see the shooting ability. And so you get to Laravia, and Laravia is one more year on the rookie contract, and I think he's probably a better all around player. I think that could go either way going forward.
That's why I focused on him.
It could definitely go either way going forward, but I think Laravia is a little more solid physically, more of a rebounder. I would sort of bet on Laravia more going forward, but I think that bet could go either direction, really.
I don't think you'll look up and I'm not trying to. In the end, they traded him for the reason they traded him.
Yeah.
But my question is, and we talked about this before, is there anyone they've traded?
No. There's no history. I was thinking about this, too. There's no real history that I can think of the Grizzlies. This is between trading a player and cutting bait on
right.
a player. There's no real history I can think of the Grizzlies, not just in this era, but since they've been in Memphis, I think, cutting bait on a young player, saying, this guy's not working out, let's move on, and then that player ends up working out somewhere. You can point to Kyle Lowry, but they didn't cut bait on Kyle Lowry.
No, they had two point guards, to get rid of
they
one.
Still believed in Kyle Lowry's a player. They didn't trade him as someone who wasn't working out. They traded someone who they still thought was good, and they just needed to make a change. But whether it's whoever.
How about Damari Carroll?
That happened so early. I don't think it was a cut bait on him. It was I can't remember he became a better player.
But
I don't think the Grizzlies had given up on Damari Carroll. It was year two when they dealt him, and I think he was part of a trade. But it wasn't we got to get rid of this guy. We're done with this guy. And the way it was Zaire Williams, or it was with David Roddy.
They didn't throw
David Roddy into a trade to get some better player. They just decided we're done with David Roddy. It's that kind of thing is what I'm talking about.
They didn't cut bait on Gravis Vasquez.
No, they traded for Quincy Pondexter. They traded one rotation level good player for another.
Yeah. Okay. So, reading the piece on that we talked about yesterday about the flat minutes.
Yeah.
It was interesting because I was on with Gabe yesterday, and he asked me where I was, what I thought about the rotations and whatnot, and he said, I just think Taylor doesn't have a feel for the game and whatever. And I guess I sort of pushed back. I said, you can't look at the light minutes for either Ja in game one or Jaren in the most recent game without accepting that he is doing this for health reasons. This is not his sense of feel for the game or how best to win a game. Don't you think it's with those two in particular is largely health? Because otherwise it would be crazy to have played Jaren 24 minutes in that game.
Yeah, but Desmond Bane doesn't have these health issues, and he's right. at 29 minutes or whatever. I would not have made that the lead of my column if his answer was only that.
Right.
It was when he said it's his more strategy based, and I was looking at the totality of it. And I wasn't trying to make an argument about it either way. I was just trying to help people understand what's going on and sort of think through it. So I didn't. I don't really have a legalistic approach to writing anyway. I'm not trying to persuade the jury or pass judgment or whatever. But I think it's an interesting thing, and I think it's a thing to sort of keep an eye on. My opinion generally, which I wrote, is that I think it's going to resolve itself, over time.
Right.
And they'll find the right balance with all this. There's definitely an injury ramp-up thing with Jaren and Ja in particular. I think it's legitimate to question but hard to know whether their approach is the right approach with that. But I think it's more than that. And again, I'm pointing to Desmond Bane, who doesn't have these issues, and he's playing 29 minutes, and other stars are playing 34.
Do you believe? And again, we're trying to disentangle things that really is impossible to know. But is this an organizational decision to treat minutes and flat? Mostly a Taylor Jenkins?
No, I think it's an organizational thing. But I also think the coaches who speaks for the organization, and so it's to me, it's all sort of one thing to some degree. But no, I don't think it's separate. When I ask the organization, I'm including the rest of the coaching staff, and I'm including the front office, I'm including whatever. I don't have a sense that something's being imposed on Taylor Jenkins to run. This is what the Grizzlies do, and Taylor Jenkins is who is speaking for the Grizzlies, right?
But it is what the Grizzlies. So if he were to, I'm not saying he would be reprimanded or something. That's not how it works. But he would be surprising to the rest of the organization had he played Desmond Bane 36 minutes on a given night, or Jaren, or Ja.
I mean,
it's hard for me
to get hyper specific with examples, but I think that they communicate
they're
with each other, or they understand
how
what they're doing.
Yeah. Within that, he did talk about battles, position battles.
Yeah, and that's a part that I think will resolve itself too, right?
What do you think he is sorting out there? Like, where are we?
You got Vince Williams and Luke Kennard and Gigi Jackson out, which opens up a lot of opportunities for like these back end guys. And so you're playing Conchar and Laravia and Jalen Wells. And when the other three guys come back, you're probably not playing all three of those guys. But if you're playing an 11-man rotation, you might be playing one of those guys, and you have to decide which one you're going to be playing, right? And so right now it's not a choice among those players because you've just been playing them all. But at some point there's a choice. Like we got one spot open. We got three guys sitting on the bench. Like which one are we putting in? And so you're trying to get more information about those guys and different combinations and how they're playing right now. And again, Taylor Jenkins would reject the term pecking order. But to me, you're trying to set up your pecking order.
Is it those things, how the pecking order, which technically doesn't exist but still exists,
right,
that will resolve itself?
Yeah.
Do you believe he'll continue with the 11-man rotation?
If it works. Clearly he's interested in that. And like an 11-man rotation, when suddenly you have Vince Williams and Gigi Jackson and Luke Kennard in it, instead of those other three guys, might be good. And the fact that I think in particular, the idea of this right now of 11th-man rotation is you're playing five bigs. Well, you're playing Zach Edey 15 to 20 minutes. You're not playing in full starters minutes.
Right.
And Santa, you're playing some at the three, too, instead of at the five. And so I actually think the 11-man thing works when you're playing lesser minutes for Edie and you're playing Santi sort of in different kind of lineups. I think it's fine. My question is, so I think there's a strategic element to the 11-man rotation, setting aside everything else, setting aside the position battle, setting aside the health. 11-man rotation, I think, is an idea that he's interested in. And I think the quicker substitution patterns to keep guys fresh throughout the game is something he's interested in. So my question would be, does an 11-man rotation and quicker substitution patterns, can that fit into a rotation where your three-star players, once they're all fully healthy and on the court, are all playing 32-plus minutes a game? I think it can, but I think it's trickier than doing that with a 10-man rotation and longer substitution patterns, right? That's sort of the math problem with it.
Well, and then the other thing you mentioned in the column, which you mentioned fleetingly and I didn't focus on a couple days ago, was you also wonder where the players are on this, because
Dez said, and it's easy to say after a win, right? But Dez said, someone asked him, what was your favorite thing about tonight after the home opener? It was like, he said, the balance, you know, and that sounds great when you win, right? It doesn't sound as great when you lose, and then you feel like you have more responsibility. I don't want to speak for the players. I just think in a general sense, star level players want to be considered star level players. And to some degree that's related to your numbers, right?
Right.
And so I do wonder about that.
All right, Nets. I have one more on this. What small sample size? What should Memphis fans be most encouraged by? What's the most encouraging development so far, and what's the most worrisome development so far?
I think all three of the stars have looked great when they've been on the floor,
right?
And none of them have like serious injuries. Like he had this little stuff with John Jaren, but it doesn't seem like a big deal. So the idea of like getting those three guys all together, like, sounds great. It's like having one out of four games so far, but like, you know, sounds great. I think the depth of the team seems really good. Like whoever's 15th on this roster is like pretty good, better than like, you know, the like three or four guys they started with last season. Right. And I think early returns on the offensive approach are pretty good. They're actually top 10 in offense. It's four games, but like they're ninth in offense right now through four games. And that's sort of what my bet on the Grizzlies being a top four level team in the West was. Like, can you be a top five defense and a top 10 offense? And like the defense, not yet, but the offense, like, might be.
And most discouraging. Worrisome.
I'm not that worried about anything, really. I think Zach Edey and Brandon Clark both are sort of, you know, I think you downgrade your expectations in the near term relative to maybe what they were at the start of training camp for both of those guys. I think what you've seen from Jay Huff and Santi Aldama minimizes the concern about that, but I think that's real. I feel like the defense stuff is going to work itself out, but I have some concerns. While I think they have good depth in terms of like every individual player is worth playing, collectively, I don't think they have great athleticism and size, and I wonder if that caps when you look at some of the problems they've had, defensive rebounding, three-point defense, being short sometimes is a problem right. with that stuff, you know, and I wonder about that.
We do have some of the giveaway items here, Chris. The other day,
I did not get a bucket hat, but I got.
Did you like the bucket hat?
I wouldn't wear it myself, other than like maybe in my house. but I like it for other people, sure.
Okay, so the bucket hat the other night. Then we've got the Jalloween shirt. This is a glow in the dark Jalloween shirt.
That'd be a great shirt for my son. Again, not something I'm going to wear, but like, you know, for a 14-year-old,
it sounds extra large. Great. It's extra large. It's at least the one I have. But
oh, that works for him.
It doesn't work for me. Already committed. And then we had this. This was in the bag too.
Yeah, I don't get a bag, but I did get a stack.
In my bag. Yes,
I
got a calendar.
I did get the magnet schedule.
They
know me well. They bring me the magnet. Yeah, they'll bring me anything else, but they bring me the
magnet schedule. Yeah. Films this week, Chris. What is here? What's it called? It's called Here.
It's Robert Zemeckis reuniting with Tom Hanks and Robin Wright, the same trio from Forrest Gump, director and stars from Forrest Gump. And this movie has gotten kind of mixed notices. It's like this. It's a movie about like it's a high concept thing about one little spot in New England and how it's changed over time from the dinosaur era to today. But a lot of it is about this couple and the life they live in this house. And he uses like de-aging technology, so you get like Robin Wright and Tom Penn as 20-year-olds, and then you get them as elderly people. And I don't know. Mixed reviews. Godzilla Minus One is back in theaters.
What is Godzilla Minus One? And by the way, 1954 Godzilla is the
original Godzilla.
Yeah. How was Godzilla?
The original Godzilla is good. So Godzilla, I mean, there's like 1,000 Godzilla movies now, but the original Godzilla was like this classic, like mid-century, you know, it's a horror monster movie that has like subtext to it. So it works on the different levels. Right. And so it's like scary monster action movie, but it's also like that scary monster is a manifestation of like the dreaded horror of nuclear war. Yeah. And that was sort of, and it was sort of kind of understood that way. And Godzilla Minus One sort of gets back to the essence of the original Godzilla. It's in some ways kind of a prequel. It's a Japanese movie, a Japanese production. And it was interesting that it came in sort of the wake of Oppenheimer. They were sort of like companion pieces last year, like this sort of more high-minded movie and this sort of popcorn movie, but both sort of rooted in the societal impact of the atomic moment there in the
40s. In Japanese with subtitles? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I don't know whether they're shown a dub version or not, but it's a Japanese movie. Yeah, subtitles probably. It's very good.
Is the subtext, like, is it a monster? Is it a monster movie? Or is the subtext very clear? Like, are they talking about?
I mean, it's probably more clear to some people than others. Different people, like, you know, read things different ways, right? But it has that. To me, it works on both levels in a way that makes it a richer experience. And it's just really good. It's a really good movie.
And then you do tick off what else is showing, either in original screenings or rescreenings or whatever you call them. But right. So I just had this question. So there's a movie called a film called Absolution with Liam Neeson, typical Liam Neeson sort of.
It really has become a typical Liam Neeson kind of thing.
Right. So he's in the mob and he's trying to get out of the mob and they're pulling him back in and whatever else. And then there's John Wick is being shown somewhere.
That's the 5th anniversary screening at, I think, Kyrville in Paradiso.
I wondered, have you seen either any of the John Wicks or the Liam Neeson sort of basic cliche?
I've seen Taken. Taken is the one that sort of reinvented him in that kind of role, right? Uh-huh. He was a different kind of actor. Now he's been typecast as that guy, middle-aged action wronged man kind of thing. Taken is very effective. There's a movie he made, I think it's called The Gray, which is him with like being hunted by wolves out in the snow.
That. Yeah,
that movie is good.
It is good.
But most of those I have not seen. I mean, he's sort of doing like action cheapies now that I don't get around to. I don't love John Wick.
Preposterous.
A lot of people love John Wick, and I respect their love for John Wick, but I don't personally love John Wick.
I saw one. I found it to be absolutely preposterous. But and then finally, Jeffrey had never heard of Terry Garr. Do you have any thoughts on Terry Garr, or do you have a favorite Terry Garr film?
So I watched for the first time a few months ago One from the Heart, which is the movie that bankrupted Francis Ford Coppola in the early 80s. And it's this musical that stars Terry Garr, and she is a knockout in that movie. And man, she deserved to be in a better movie than she was in. Yeah. She's gorgeous, but also has this rare, very every girl quality, and like really works, but nothing else in the movie really works for the most part. Cinematography does. So I've seen Terry Gard in tons of movies, you know, Tootsie and Young Frankenstein,
Close
whatever.
Encounters, Young Frankenstein.
Yeah. But my real association with Terry Gard, so I was a weirdo, as you might not be surprising to you. And I got obsessed with David Letterman in like, I don't know, sixth, seventh grade, something like that, eighth grade. And I used to tape, like VHS tape,
right.
Because I couldn't stay up that late.
Right.
I would tape David Letterman every single night. It's like my General Hospital
or
whatever.
She was on all the time, right?
I would tape David Letterman and watch it every day. And she, I don't know, maybe she lived in the neighborhood, because she would be on, like, not even promoting stuff, you know? It would just be like, someone would cancel, they'd go call Terry, and she would show up. And clearly they were friends, and maybe more, and there was some flirtatious...
She's funny.
Some flirtatious thing going on, and they had this wild chemistry, like, when she would be a guest on David Letterman that I still remember watching, like, as a, you know... 13-year-old or whatever. Yeah,
that's great. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
You can read Chris over at the Daily Memphian. If you're in need of a midweek boost, FanDuel, America's number one sports book, has you covered with the Hump Day Parlays Reward Stack. Every Wednesday, get parlay profit boosts on everything from spreads to over-unders, even player props. So don't let the weekend have all the fun. Take advantage of the Hump Day Parlays Reward Stack. Look for it at FanDuel, FanDuel app to find your profit boosts. If you're new to FanDuel, go to FanDuel.com and use the promo code Calkins. That's C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Opt-in required. Max wager amount applies. Bonus issues, not withdrawal, but profit boost tokens. Restrictions apply, including token expiration. See terms for both offers at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789. Sam Hardiman, when we return, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Joined now by Sam Hardiman. Sam Hardiman writes for the Daily Memphian. You can read him over there, and is nice enough to come on with us every Wednesday. So, Sam, I said this earlier in the show, and I said it to you off the air, that when I saw the fracas in the stands where two proud Yankee fans tried to pry the ball out of the glove of Mookie Betts, I was worried because I knew your dad was going to be at one of these games. I know he loves the Yankees dearly, and I was relieved to see that he was not involved in that particular action. Did your dad go to the game, one of these two games? What was his experience?
He went to game three, so he was not at game four last night where that idiocy took place. That was just ridiculous. But it was silly. Like Mookie's like having to jump up and down not to dislocate his shoulder. Like, it was ridiculous.
It was actually it was actually very dangerous. They're literally suspending him up there. They've said that they obviously escorted from the game, but they said they're being allowed back in tonight. I'm a little dubious whether they'll be allowed, and I don't believe they should be allowed back in tonight. Do you?
I don't know. I just think it was, like, you really could have hurt Mookie Betts. Like, don't do that. But, no, my dad was not there last night.
Okay.
His experience was sad because
he saw the loss. Oh,
yeah. I mean, to go down 3-0, we check in after when he goes to games, and very little was said from him leaving the game, getting in the train, taking the car, except for like the text at 2 a.m, 3 Eastern. I'm home, like checking in. I'm home, and it's like, so it's just somber, you know, it's somber, but you know, it was obviously a great experience to get together, and very few people get to do it. So I'm sure he's happy about it.
Sports, man. It's amazing the impact they can have on your mood.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. Yeah. Like, I went to see Moulin Rouge last night at the Orpheum. And it was great. Our colleague Laura was there, and Michael Donahue I saw there, and packed, and really fun. And when you go to there's no danger that, like, your team's going to lose and you're going to walk out of the Orpheum feeling horrible, right? You just go, and it's a lovely show, and sports puts your emotions at risk. What's the saddest you've ever been after a sporting event? Not that you participated.
Yeah, not that I participated in.
Yeah.
Missouri, 2012 homecoming, and forgive me, the details are fuzzy, and they're fuzzy because I was, you know, 20 years old, 19 years old, whatever. But Andrew Baggett, the Missouri field goal kicker, missed the field goal, and we lost. It, like, dinged off the upright. And I just remember, like, the silence. I remember how grumpy I was. My buddies were, like, I think we had, like, the most miserable IHOP dinner after that to, like, soak things up.
It's
that ever. So, yeah, I would say that for sure.
All right. I happen to know, I'll get to the civic events here in a moment, but you also recently have been on a trip to Montreal where you picked up whatever is ailing you. I'm sorry you don't feel great. You can hear it a little bit in your voice. And you went to see the Canadians play at the Forum. How was that?
It was awesome. You know, speaking of, like, what sports do to people, right? It's just, like, the devotion that Montrealers, I don't know if that's the word there, I'm not going to try it again, right. But, like, that they have for their team and the reverence they have for this history, because they are the Yankees of the NHL. They just happened to turn into the Charlotte Hornets, like, the past, like, right. 30 years, right? So they went from, like, Yankees
to the finals recently.
They went to the finals in 2021, and they were not really in that series. It was, like, such a fluky run. It was totally fluky. Like, it wasn't real. Like, the last cup they won was in 93, Jeff, the year I was born. Like, they've kind of been the Hornets. Like, the recent run of picks. Anyway, like, it was so cool. And, you know, they're rowdy there. I mean, they are rowdy. I mean, like, literally there were people getting escorted out because they were just a little too inebriated and were falling asleep. Like,
but is the place itself, like, hockey arenas are only, it can't be a cathedral like Fenway or Wrigley, or aren't they, isn't there a certain, like, is it, do you, is yeah, walking
it's
in?
Grungy.
It's grungy. It's grungy. Really?
It's like, there's a little grunge to it. I mean, like, it opened in 96. This is the Centre Bell. It replaced the famous Forum. But, like, it is, like, it's a little, got a little hockey grunge. Like, there's some nice things to buy and to eat and to drink. Like, it's got all the things.
Right.
Got sweet, all that. But, like, it's just got, like, that intensity poured into it over time, right? Like, so much hoping and waiting and love that you just, like, there's just a little bit of, like, white knuckle to it.
Who'd they play?
They played the Blues. They beat the Blues 5-2.
Oh, and they won. Look at that.
They won. Yeah, they lost 8-2 last night to the Kraken, which is crazy. But, yeah, they won. It was really cool to see. We had a great dinner afterward. Montreal is a fantastic city. I'm going to ask Jeffrey. Does Jeffrey know how many people live in Montreal, like, city proper?
Do you want me to look it up, or are you asking me to guess?
I'm asking you a guess.
I'm going to say, like, 2.5 million, 3 million, something like that.
1.8. million.
Wow.
That's a lot of people. Like, low-key, big city. Awesome city.
Yeah. It's funny, by the way. We did have, in terms of the Yankees, if they can win tonight, we did have the recent example of the Edmonton Oilers coming back from 3-0. Now, they ultimately lost Game 7, but they made it a series. You got any hope? Can the Yankees do that?
There's some hope, you know, but just also, like, odds, no. Okay. So, like, no.
All right.
No need to be hopeful until there's Game 7.
All right. Onward to the civic events. You had a fabulous piece that you did, and I'm going to get to it in a moment, where you interviewed Gronk. Grok? Grok.
Grok, not Gronk.
Not Gronk. Gronk.
Very
Gronk
different people.
Different. Different. Yeah, different level of insight, intellectual capacity. But
don't sleep on Gronk, man.
But he's from Buffalo, man. He's from Buffalo. He's one of us. But I'm going to get that in a moment. Obviously, early voting ends tomorrow in Memphis, and we've got Election Day next week. What is, put aside the national stuff for a minute, what's the biggest, and I don't mean headline, I don't want you to predict which, who's going to win, but in terms of the local issue, what's the biggest local issue that people people are voting on? Do you think the headliner will be?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing, because I think the biggest headline is probably the two contested tough races in State House District 83 and 97. But the most important thing probably going forward is whether or not Memphis brings runoffs back in mayoral races, because voters vote on that. That's on the ballot in the city of Memphis. And these gun referendums, and I'm not going to list all three, but the three gun referendums that we've talked a lot about, like those things are going to, how those things go, let's just say like those topics are things we're going to be talking and thinking quite a bit about over these next couple of years, I think.
By the way, so in terms of the gun referendum, if it is, let's just say, I'm not predicting this, but I'm asking about a hypothetical. Hypothetically, they pass, if not overwhelmingly, persuasively, emphatically, okay? So does that make, because we know that the folks in Nashville who among other things, hand out the money that comes to Memphis for, among other things, the Grizzlies, we know they're mad about the fact that these gun referendums are happening. Now, the people who put them on the ballot don't have any real control over what's going to happen. Like, but will they be madder, do we think? Is there some prediction they'll be madder if they pass overwhelmingly?
I'm not qualified to make that prediction. I think that, like, I think the act of them being on the ballot was the thing. Right. And, you know, the voters are going to vote. And I think, like, people, I don't think that really changes much. Right. That would be my guess, but I'm not really qualified. Like I said, right. Qualified. Like now it's to the voters. The voters are going to do what they're going to do, you know?
But in the end, again, just to underline this, nothing will change in terms of the actual gun laws.
Nothing
will change.
Happening. No, this is, and it's an expression of political will. It sets up potential other moves legally that the city of Memphis can make to essentially, if they were to ever get a court decision, right, like at a national level about gun laws, right, like in the way that the Dobbs decision overturned Roe v. Wade, things could maybe start the ball moving. But, like, that's what can happen, right?
Right.
It can't, nothing else will happen. No governance of firearms in Memphis, Tennessee is going to change.
Right. They local politicians can say, see, this is what our people want, and you're denying us, our people, right. their right. And they can say that over and over again, but it won't change anything. Right. At least not immediately. Okay. You asked not Gronk, but Grok. What is Grok, just to clarify?
Grok is a chatbot. It is the X version of ChatGPT. It runs, it is all intelligence generative AI that runs on a large language model, which means it's trained on the facts of the world.
And you asked Grok a bunch of questions about the election. And what was fascinating here is Grok does not seem to agree with Elon Musk on a whole bunch of fronts. That is what was your discovery was. What was this? What was the experience like, by the way? Is Grok instantly responsive? How did all this go?
Yeah, I mean, Grok, it's instant. I mean, we are talking. I mean, like, the tech here is, like, it's crazy. I mean, it's really instant. We asked some questions. But the reason we did the story, and not to get political, it's not a question of anything that I feel or the Daily Memphian feels, but more of just Elon Musk has been very outspoken in his support for former President Trump in the presidential election. And he has said some things that are frankly not true or exaggerations or taken highly out of context, you know, largely about people who aren't citizens of the United States getting to vote in the election, which is illegal and happens very little. And so we asked Grok that. I asked Grok that because Grok is trained on the facts of the internet. It's supposed to be telling you truth. And Musk has said he wants Grok, and he's framed it politically. He wants Grok to be what he believes to be the truth. He wants to be the truth seeking AI. So it's very interesting if this very powerful man would lean on his generative AI to spit out a version of reality.
It's amazing.
Grok
says, for example, studies and audits have shown that instances of non-citizens voting in federal or state elections are extremely rare. For example, analysis around the 2016 election found the rate of suspected non-citizen voting was minuscule. goes on to say, these incidents are typically due to mistakes rather than systemic efforts to vote illegally. So, and then I was really astonished. Grok said Grok would lean towards Kamala Harris.
Yeah, Grok, it is, I'm not, Grok's answers can change. I want to be
really
clear. Yeah, Grok, like, the base on the inputs, like how the model's being trained, like, I do not know if the answer I get today or on October 26th when we ask that question will be the same in 3 years, right? Or whatever. But what Grok was saying is essentially, and you can read it, I think, better than I can paraphrase right. it, but, like, you know, if Grok was forced to choose, like, right. Grok yes, makes yes, a yeah. lot no, of no, efforts no. in its answers to be like, yo, I don't, like, not yo, but, like, Grok right. doesn't really have a board here. Like, Grok, I'm a model. Grok, like,
Grok did say yeah, that Kamala Harris is not controlled by any individual or entity, et cetera. And then, yes, Grok lays out sort of some neutral stuff about, I would advocate for the candidate who, based on their campaign promises and past actions, seems most likely to foster unity, blah, 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 blah. Then you wrote, if forced to lean towards a nuanced preference, what would Grok say? Quote, given the emphasis on legal accountability, democratic norms, and a desire for a change in leadership style, as per some sentiments, I might lean towards Kamala Harris. You forced an answer out of Grok. Grok did not want to give an answer, really. It goes on to say, but this is a nuanced preference, acknowledging that Trump's support base has significant reasons for wanting his return, primarily focused on economic nationalism and challenging established political norms. Anyway, it's a fascinating piece, Sam. I would urge people to go see what Grok says about the election. We got to go. I appreciate it. Thank you, Sam. Get well.
Thanks, Jeff.
Bye-bye. Sam Hardiman on Twitter or X at Sam Hardiman. If you are selling your house, I would call Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams Realty. It's funny. Of course, the idea that it would be great to have multiple offers, like, that seems great. Of course you would want multiple. Who wants one offer, one low ball offer? And it almost seems greedy to want one in this day and time. But that's what Josh Hysaw is aiming for. And that is what Judy got when she was listening to this show and signed up with Josh Hysaw. Multiple offers within 24 hours. Cannot promise that will happen to you. I can promise, though, that Josh will market your house aggressively. Flexible fees, no upfront cost, let you out of your contract at any time. It is Josh Hysaw, 901-461-8147, joshhasthebuyers.com. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Want to shout out Walter, Jeffrey. Walter's posted a video. He's driving his daughter to school, and the intro music for our radio show is their clock, basically. And so when they heard the intro music and they were so far away from school,
the daughter knew she
was in terrible trouble. So anyway, I hope you got to school okay. I do want to remind you, every Wednesday over at FanDuel, you got the Hump Day Parlays Reward Stack. That's profit boosts. Yep. Parlay profit boosts on everything from spreads to over-unders, even player props. It's the Hump Day Parlays Reward Stack in the FanDuel app to find your profit boosts every Wednesday. A little midweek extravaganza courtesy of FanDuel. FanDuel.com/Calkins is the promo code. C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S. Must be 21 or older in present Tennessee. Opt-in required. Max wager amount applies. Bonus issued is not withdrawable. Profit boost tokens. Restrictions apply, including token expiration. See terms for both offers at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Jeffrey, what is coming up next?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. The Field of 68's Rob Doster joins the program. Norton Hurd will join them as well. CJ Hurt joins us on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Cobb with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for now. Our work is done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.